The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Nora Casey, it's great to see you. I'm sure lots of the country saw you on the Late Late Show talking about something that, I'd say, shocked them and surprised them, that the whole idea that such a strong, confident woman such as yourself had been the victim once of domestic abuse.
For 9 years, actually. So I can't tell you how hard it was to do it. I think people who know me know it was incredibly hard to talk about it. And I'd buried it so deep and I'd run away from it so often, I found it incredibly hard to actually talk about it without being back in the moment. You know, sometimes if you're talking about something bad that happens to you, the more you talk about it, the easier it gets. You can almost talk about it without thinking about it. Whereas when I was trying to describe some of those things, I was actually physically back in that space. So it took an awful lot out of me. I really felt exhausted afterwards and questioned myself again.
How long ago is it now?
So this happened in my 20s. I was only 23 at the time when I met Peter. So I was in London. I'd just finished nursing in Scotland and I was in transition. I was working for the Royal College of Nursing, but actively pursuing a journalism, postgraduate journalism course in Harlow. So I was in that kind of phase where I didn't know very many people in London. I'd come down with a midwife in a battered old Volkswagen. I was living in Diggs in Hammersmith and no money to my name. And, you know, you just feel all at sea, you've no family around. Now, it was my choice. Like, you know, I left home at 17 to train as a nurse, so it was my choice to be there. But I often wonder about all those things as to whether it was the perfect storm and maybe none of them would have happened if I'd been here in Dublin and closer to family, maybe closer to friends. I don't know myself. I think why I didn't want to talk about it, when I met Richard, he used to say to me, it's part of who you are. So although you want to pretend, I literally have pretended most of my life that those years didn't exist. I would wash over them. I would squirm if somebody asked me a question about what happened in my 20s. I could tell you chapters and chapters of all the studies I did, how I was holding down four different jobs, how I was, you know, there's no surprise where I got my work ethic from.
Trying to just take your mind off what had actually happened to you.
I never talk about my personal life. I don't think anybody who knows me since I came home even knew I was married for the first time.
That's actually what shocked me. The first thing of the shocks was, hold on a second, I thought Richard, who of course Richard sadly, who died a number of years ago and who was an absolutely charming, lovely man, I actually didn't realise that you had been married before you had married Richard.
It was the best kept secret of my life. And I think because I was so ashamed, and when you're in that situation, you find it very hard afterwards. I used to think it happened to somebody else. You know, even when I was talking about it last Friday, I was imagining this couldn't possibly be me, you know, that I was the one who actually lived in that relationship and allowed it to happen. I think the reality is when I let go of something that was very bad and I steadied myself and I got myself back on my feet, I opened my mind to the possibility of something good happening to me, which was Richard. So I often say to people, you know, that when you find somebody who's truly good, it kind of makes up for all the bad stuff you've been through.
But just for people who didn't see The Late Late Show, how did you get away from this abusive relationship? Because for so many women, I think this might be the important thing, and indeed men, because there are men who suffer in abusive relationships as well, and physically abusive ones. How do you actually manage to get away? How do you actually develop the strength and confidence, given that your confidence has been eroded so badly by what you've experienced?
And I think that people, since it happened, I can't tell you how many strong women have told me that if it had ever happened to them, they would have kicked the man out the door immediately. And they don't understand how terrible that makes me feel. When people say, if a man lifted his hand to me, I'd be straight out the door. He'd never get a chance to do it a second time. I just feel worse when somebody says
that. But it's not that easy, is it?
It's not easy. It's totally bound up in your emotions and your feelings. If I walked down to the street now and somebody, you know, hit me, I would, of course, press charges and, you know, I'd feel. But when somebody you love and you believe loves you does something, you start to doubt yourself. You believe that maybe it was your fault. I can't, over a very short period of time, I used to berate myself saying I said the wrong thing, I triggered him, I knew he had a few drinks in him, I shouldn't have said it that way.
You start blaming yourself.
Yes. all the time. And then when he was on his knees, like literally crying his eyes out, saying, I will never hit you again. I don't know what got over me. It was the stress of work. I'd had one too many drinks. I'll go to AA. You wanted to believe him. I wanted to believe him. We had a life together. You know, we'd everything was bound up in one another. I wanted to believe that he would be the better person because he was not a monster. I am always saying that people imagine that somebody who abuses you, that if I imagined for 1 minute, Matt, that I married a man who was a monster, I would be seriously devastated. I didn't. I married a person who I believed loved me and I loved him.
And you must have had good times together, did you?
Yes. It's hard for me. Do you know, in the context of having to talk about it, I had to go into the basement, pull out dusty boxes and find photos of him and I together that I have not looked at for 2 decades. I'm telling you, I would... Just even looking at them, I found myself looking at these pictures of a woman laughing with a man she loved. And I had forgotten all of that because in my mind, after I left him, he turned into a huge, enormous, frightening thing. You asked me a question, which I meant to answer. I would say that every Friday, without fail, especially in the last year, after the particularly big beating where he broke my ribs and my face, my cheekbone, I swore I would leave him. I mean, I used to come home from work and, you know, I was up early and out the door before he was even up, and I tried to stay out as long as I could, and I said, I'm going to leave him this weekend. Monday morning, I would cry all the way into work. I'd bring makeup in the car to repair my mascara because I was so devastated that I hadn't the guts to leave him. And then he did something. I think, you know, that I always just got that slap he gave me, the really hard one when my mum and dad were visiting. And he just casually walked away. And I just thought, you know, I can't let him do that to me again. He's never going to change. Doesn't matter how often he cries or how often he begs me to stay. And at the time he was claiming he would take his own life if I left him. You know, he was using every kind of emotional tactic, knowing that I was distancing myself. The difference was I told my mother. I had never told anybody my whole life. I told nobody. I didn't have really good friends at the time. They were his friends and his acquaintances. And I found myself in Ireland for a christening and, a confirmation. And I ended up telling my mother. And it was almost like the fact that I told her, I had to do it. I can't describe that. I was trying to use the silliest analogy ever on The Late Late. I said, it's like losing weight and telling somebody you're going to lose weight, you have to, once you've declared it. It's a stupid analogy, but it was the mere fact that I said to her, you know, he's been terrible to me. And, you know, my family thought he was an absolute gentleman. I'd arrive over to Dublin and there'd be flowers waiting for me, there'd be gifts, there'd be presents. In my life, all of my family thought he was an amazing man. You know, the best catch on the planet, the most wonderful husband. So I kept it really close to myself. And when I told her, I went back with a feeling of strength I can't describe it to. I had such courage. I can't even describe it.
Have you had any contact from him since?
He's now dead.
He's now dead.
Because I wouldn't talk about it if I felt it hurt people. So he passed away and then I felt... Why do I keep running from this? I need to talk about it. I'm not hurting anyone. After he died, I think I just, you know, in my mind, put it into a box and buried it in the garden. So I wasn't really going to think about it too much. And then, you know, the last few years have been pretty tough for me with Richard dying. And it's only recently, in the last 6 months or so, this is going to sound strange, but I think once something enters your mind, you feel like you're drowning in testimony from women from the four courts and from the family courts and, you know, so many women who lose their lives and so many courageous people who are afraid for their children, afraid for themselves, who can't name themselves. And all the time that was eating away in my mind saying, you know, you could do something about this. You could actually, there's nobody in Ireland has ever stood up and said, I have been a victim of domestic abuse.
Because it's a shocking number of women have died this year in suspected cases of domestic abuse. Tell me about the people who've been in contact with you, because I can only imagine that you must have been inundated with people wanting to tell you their stories, their experiences.
I think I didn't think about that. I was so worried about doing that show myself, and I think I'm not speaking out of school by saying The Late Late had somebody ready to stand in because I was nervous all week, and I would wake up thinking I can't do it, there's no way I can do it, and then I would get my resolve back during the day. So I never thought of the moment after it, and I was just overwhelmed with, firstly, massive messages of support from people that I know, and particularly from men, and then these terrible, harrowing stories. There was a young woman last week who, now I'd say, no exaggeration, Matt, I'm nearly at 1,000 messages that just flooded in through LinkedIn, Facebook, anywhere that I have a presence. They came in. I just picked up a big batch of letters as well from work. And this young woman was in the toilet 3 or 4 times last week, and she was on Facebook Messenger asking me to message her back because he was outside the door and he would take the phone off her and she'd have to delete it. And I just kept encouraging her to go to Women's Aid because, do you know what? I'm not a counsellor. I'm a woman who this happened to, and she needed professional help, but she didn't feel she could. And so I hope by now, I was speaking to Women's Aid today actually, I was hoping by now that she would actually go and get professional help, because the key thing for me is talking to somebody. I know that seems ridiculous, and there was a campaign about people listening. It's not about the person listening, it's about the person having the courage to talk about it themselves.
Have you had help?
No, no.
Are you going to get it now?
In a way, my therapy was actually speaking, and I didn't do any interviews last week, and I didn't talk to anybody. And when I went outside the door, I was overwhelmed with people hugging me and strangers. You know, it's a bit weird. I was just dropping Dara, he's doing his leave insert, and you know, as I dropped him, this woman approached me and told me the most awful, harrowing story about a sister who took her own life and who was beaten, and without any preamble, by the way, it's just like, Nora, I just want to say to you, I cried all the way through your interview. It was me. I was there. I was a victim. And this woman approached me at Bloom and said, I've had 4 operations on my face because of domestic abuse. And she hugged me for about 10 minutes. And so I feel like I was trying to go into Marks and Spencer's to get some groceries, and a doctor approached me. And, you know, you're overwhelmed with this feeling of everybody's sorrow and their pain and how much we underestimate it. It can't possibly be all of the ones, and Women's Aid have had a huge upsurge in the calls, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. I've had men who I know professionally who wrote to me and told me about domestic abuse that they had gone through, with wives who nobody would believe it of, and male partners. So I feel I'm in a vortex of people's pain, and it may have happened 30 years ago, it may have happened yesterday, but it still feels very fresh to them.
Nora, thank you for coming in. Thank you for talking about what is such a really important issue, and which, you know, needed probably somebody to talk of from personal experience to get other people to open up, and hopefully the support services are there. Women's Aid National Free Phone Helpline is 1800 341 900. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And of course, there are other places as well where people can get help. And I hope that after the time you've taken, I hope it's actually a relief and a release for you as well.
Thank you. And I'm really pleased to be talking to you, Matt, actually. Thank you.
Nora, thank you very much.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.